Blog Talk Radio.
Commission race. We having to break it down right now because it's starting to rain. But I'm sitting here. The staff is handling it. I'm trying to get the show rolling. So what's up? So
well,
that's what's going on. But today's show is a little interesting because, you know, I wanted to come on the air last week, and I want to be honest with everybody. I had a major brain fart. I could not wrap my head around none of this crap that was going on. Not none.
I don't know why.
I couldn't wrap my head around it good enough to even start to speak on it. And when you can't, you know, sometimes it's just best not to even say nothing if you can't say nothing constructive. So that's why we went on the
Well, it depends on what your definition of constructive means.
No idea whatsoever of how I even felt yet. I was still going through my emotions of how I felt about what was going
mm-hmm.
on.
So how are we feeling?
I couldn't verbalize.
Well, why? I could. I mean,
you could.
I was very clear in my
mind. I couldn't figure out how to describe the show I wanted to do because I had
It was funny.
My-
it was entertainment. That's what it was. It was entertainment. People take these conventions way too seriously. They're freaking trade shows. They bring out the new models. You know, they bring out, you know, their taglines for the year, whatever. But it is entertainment. It is like a giant pep rally.
Now,
what happened there was ugly at both of them. They were both ugly in their own ways. But, you know, me and the Democrats have, I guess we're looking through a different lens.
Right.
So, but I saw it as a necessary course correction. Now we know where everybody stands. The question is, what you going to do?
Right. That's the question. We're sitting here at a fork in the road, and that's the title of the show today. Fork in the road, where we go from here. And we're standing now. And we got some people who've already started to explore different forks in the road. You got some Democrats who are already running down the road of so-called unity and this, that, and the other. And you already got folks who are from the Bernie campaign, the Bernie or Bus folks, they're going down their road to where they're going. And then there's a large group of us that is kind of still standing there that are like, hey, I feel this way, I feel this way. Which way do I go? I mean, me personally, I'm most likely going to follow the party because I'm a party guy. But I got friends, and I even got family who are most likely going to go down the Bernie or Bus road. I mean, and this is America. We're free to do that. But.
But what? What's the but? Scout, you still with us? Well, it looks like this is what happens when you do a live and remote. And sometimes these little glitches happen. So, Scout, while we're waiting for him to get back on, and hopefully I'm still trying broadcasting, I will just babble on in my stream of consciousness kind of thing. But as Scout said, you know, he's feeling some type of way, and he's a party person. I'm a progressive. I'm not a party person. I don't even know what that means. So, for me, it's a little bit clearer for me. and my path is a little bit clearer. The Democrats have laid out exactly who they want to be. They have laid out exactly how they wish their party to go. I say let them have at it. I respectfully decline to participate. I don't care about the party. I care about all the work that I do is based on that one simple and very clear tenet. I don't get confused when I operate off of that platform. So for those Democrats who are trying to figure it all out, that's great. You know, figure it out, find your own way. But for those who are clear, you know, we have those Democrats who want to save the party, and it is a noble and ambitious goal. I wish everyone luck at it. I'm not going to say it can't be done. I'm going to say that I can't be a part of it because I have my history with the Democratic Party, and they have showed me they're behind every single time. And they showed the progressives they're behind at that convention. That whole convention, day one, was meant to bring y'all to heel. It was meant to let y'all know just who had power, how it was going to be wielded. And once Bernie uttered those words, he lost any leverage he had. So, you know, for those who are upset about it and think he sold out, I don't know if he sold out, but he just capitulated under, you know, he wasn't in pole position. At once he uttered those words, he lost it. Now, he could have maintained that we can chop up and go into what's wrong and what should have, would have, could have been done. But unfortunately, hindsight is 20/20. I don't know what went on behind those back rooms. For those putting that picture up there of Bernie with the scar and all that, I think he got his ass beat. Stop it. Just please stop it. They didn't have to beat his ass to do that. All they had many other threats. I mean, I'm no fan of the Democrats, and I know how they roll just as hard as anyone else, but they don't have to beat their ass. That's what y'all need to understand.
All right, can you hear me now? All right, we had a tad bit of a difficulty there. So let's see how this works. This is what happens when we're doing live remotes and stuff of this nature. So we're waiting for Stacey Hopkins to call back in. This is live radio, so this is what happens when we're trying to do stuff. Are you there, Stacey?
Yeah, I'm back. I don't know what the hell happened. The line just went blank, and I just kept going. And then I heard the outro music.
I dropped, and I was trying to see if I could hear myself, and I couldn't even hear the outro music, but I seen it playing. So I just called back in through the guest number, and I'm still live from the direct number that you did. I'm using the direct application. Well, anyway, I'm glad that you try to keep on going there because I can hear stuff that is like this dropped. It is dropped. So, I mean, this is what live radio trying to do remotes happens, you know.
It's a conspiracy. They don't want that voice to be heard.
And I was
saying
some good shit. They come in nobody heard. So I'm not even going to go back through it. Everybody's sitting out here doing whatever. I mean, but it's crazy. So,
well, I don't know who heard what, but I was kind of saying before then, like, you know, you going through some things because of the party. I'm not a party person. Never was, never. I don't even know what that means, right? I mean,
right.
What makes you, what differentiates between, most people say I'm with the Democratic Party. No, you just vote Democratic. You don't do things with the party. You're not a dues-paying member. I don't understand when people say they're with the party, what that means, but that's something else totally different. But I would be willing.
I'm a member.
Okay, so what do you get, a card and like, you know, discounts at special businesses? I mean, what does that mean? You're a member of the party, okay? That's like saying I'm a member of the KKK. What does that mean?
Well, and so, you know, for a lot of us, we have actual, you know, We have voting rights inside of the actual organization, and this is why a couple of weeks ago
organization. But it's a private organization, so it's basically a social club.
Nah, because they're so good. You got to look at the fact that there's
it's a private organization.
There's statutes inside Georgia law, and even states like in most states, there are statutes that allow us to do stuff that other private organizations don't do. I mean, so you can sit there and say,
like what?
You know, we qualify elected officials. The party, even at the county party level, we qualify elected officials. You run and get on the ballot, and it's easier to get on the ballot in the state of Georgia if you come through either the Democratic or Republican parties.
It's a mechanism of the system, but it's a private, this is like a private public partnership, right? So it is a private business that is involved in public business. So I mean, the function of the party and what it does, even though it's allowed to do so, I think we need to start questioning, is it the right thing? Because you are subverting democracy.
The party itself. It's not the organization itself. It's some of the folks who belong to those organizations. You have that happening.
So you have private members who are making decisions on behalf of an organization that is a private organization in nature, but is dabbling in public.
But you also have that same thing taking place in government. We have people that we've chosen to go represent us that go up there and do what the fuck they want to do. But it comes down again to the voting membership. The voting membership, not only with the regular citizens and the electorate, but also inside of the party apparatus, are shirking their duties at points in time where you are just allowing people to do what they want to do.
So it's a control thing.
At the end of the day, yeah. Let's be honest about that. It's about control.
So it's about control, and the Democratic Party is authoritarian as fuck.
Hold on 1 second. Hey, George Sheedy, we're live down south and dirty. Say hey to everybody.
Hey to everybody.
So that was George. George, we just got through this video shooting. So we're getting ready to.
Are we going to hear about trap music? I got to hear. I have to hear George.
Yeah, I'll go with him. Yeah, my stuff is here. Yeah, we ought to do a whole show about him and his thing with trap music.
That's a special edition right there. So, George, is George on the line? Does he want to talk for a minute?
He was just getting in the car. I was just, he was looking at me like, what are you doing your show? Hey, come talk to us. Just say hey to everybody. So,
We like George. George is a good guy.
Yeah, but he's coming. And that's another thing that, when we cut off, that was one of the things that I was talking about, was that we are not, there's a lot of people that are pissed off about what's going on the national level that are so pissed off with each other that they can't work together on stuff on the local level. And I'm in the car with Bridgman Bolger right now. So we riding back to the house. But one thing, we can't get people
brought that up.
We can't get people to work on the left of to get good people like George Cheney elected because you pissed off about Bernie and Hillary. Fuck that. Because what happens in Washington at the end of the day really is not going to affect what's going on here in DeKalb County. It's not going to affect what's going on in Houston.
So I got a question for y'all. Why are Democrats mad about the Johnny Isaacson thing?
Because he came through a...
Convention,
and the theme of the convention is stronger together. And he sat there, clapped his hands, held the banner, and gave the appearance something that it wasn't. And his reason for supporting Isaacson is, we've been good friends. Well, if that's the case, he has never supported you in any of your races, and he will never support any Democrat in any race in the state of Georgia. And
he's a Republican. He has worked across the aisle with Democrats. See, that's the misnomer. Everybody thinks, we've got the whole political debate is called with each side being the enemy, right? But what really happens. There's more bipartisanship that actually happens that people aren't aware of, right? But in the public, it's set up as the GOP versus the Democrats. This whole story kind of blew that whole myth wide open. So, and then Democrats like to claim that we need to, that they need bipartisanship to get stuff done. You need to be able to work across the aisle to get stuff done. So, and nobody, and no Democrat wanted to run on that race. Y'all couldn't get anybody. The best y'all could get is Barksdale. But no, everybody who was a marquee name passed on that race because they knew Johnny Isaacson, for all of the political posturing in public and private, he does work behind the aisle behind y'all. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the guy, but I know him. I've done business with him when he was with Northside Realty, and his office has helped me out on an issue with my husband. So at the end of the day, it's what the elected official does for his constituents, not what he says public, because he's trying – Isaacson is playing a nice little game, which is very effective, which they all play. What you say in public is for your base. What you do in private is actual governing and actual leadership. So why are Democrats, if they say they want bipartisanship, why are they so upset about the Johnny Isaacson thing with Scott coming out and supporting him and other high-ranking Dems in Georgia saying they like Johnny Isaacson, and then what you hear from the bottom coming up or from the local committees is like, oh, my God, they sold us out, this and that. These are your people.
And that's why we mad, because they're supposed to be our people. They're supposed to be our people. You know, you done run as a Democrat. You want money from Democrats. And that's our job at the party, to get Democrats elected. So, therefore, you're going against our mission, which is to get you, not only get Democrats elected, but get your ass reelected. You know what I'm saying? He's going to let the Democratic Party support his ass in his reelection bid. But what's going to happen now? He's gonna face a primary challenger, and that challenge is probably gonna be a little more difficult than he usually has.
What he hopes is that he will be, his district will be redrawn into a more reddish blue area, and he can maintain his ideology of being a Democrat, but then too far to the right.
Yeah, he's a conservative Democrat, and he's a conservative Democrat that is in an area that right now. He might actually be representing his people, and if that's the case, that's fine. But then but there's people who live in his district who are shocked as hell about what he says, what he just said.
He's a state senator. He doesn't have a district. He has a state. So this is the state of Georgia weighing in.
We're talking about David Scott.
Oh, David Scott. Okay.
We're talking about David Scott.
Well, I'm sure if you asked Sanford Bishop about Isaacson in private, he would probably tell you, yeah, I'm down with that. But Sanford Bishop is smart. He kept his mouth shut.
He's not going to give a public endorsement. You can do whatever you want to in private. Just don't say it in public. You confuse.
And he's not going to give him no money.
Yeah, he's not going to give him no money. His own way. You're not even going to see it. So if you're going to be friends, friendship's got to have reciprocity. That means that I do something for you, you do something for me. And I promise you,
money is bipartisan. Money is bipartisan. I mean, we see that with business interests that they play, they donate, and there's a really great documentary on HBO by Alexandra Pelosi. If you haven't seen it, check it out. Money is bipartisan, right? The money don't care. The money just wants to put its bets on who's going to be in power, right? So is this not the same thing?
This is a true statement. The way who we're saying, Isaacson is not going to put money back into David Scott. David Scott is being used. And that what gets us mad as Democrats is because even as Bernie folks talked about the Hillary folks, a lot of them, we felt like they were giving up their vote for the fact that they want to be used. Now, at the point in time, if I'm supporting somebody, I'm supporting somebody because it supports my ideology. Regardless of what you're going to do for me, I'm going to support my ideology.
Now, this is what's going on. David Scott is never going to get anything back from them damn Republicans. The bipartisanship stuff happened. It is heavily us Democrats going to the Republicans supporting what they want. When we put some big stuff on the table and we need them, they don't come back and help us out. We have seen this in the Georgia legislature. We see this in the United States Congress. Anytime we support them, they don't come back and support us.
But you have Scott saying that not only are they personal friends, but they have worked together across the aisle to get stuff done. Is that not the purpose of government?
But guess what? When we say work together, again, let's talk about reciprocity. Who is doing the most work? Is it really David going across the aisle to work with Johnny and stuff that Johnny wants, or is Johnny actually coming back across the aisle and helping David when David needs some help? But then let's come to that, ask that question too, because I supported David's opponent in the last race. So in the last time he ran, I was behind Michael Owens. So my question has always been, what is David Scott really doing when he gets up there? And I know he does a lot of great stuff inside of the community, but when it comes to his actual votes, the stuff that's going to change the law, what is he doing?
Apparently, according to Scott, he's done a lot. They've been friends for years. He's his partner. Quote what he said on 11 Alive WXIA. I've always voted for Johnny Isaacson. He's my friend. He's my partner. And I always look out for my partner. They've been up in this game for a minute, so none of this is new.
Yeah, so, I mean, but for me, I've never heard him publicly admit that. So now we know what's been going on. Basically, we can sit there and say David Scott is a Dino.
Well, Scott has nothing to worry about because he's on the poll, right? Nobody's running against Scott. So he feels empowered to say, you know.
But there are several folks already posturing themselves.
Get some air in
and out. So several folks posturing themselves to run against him in the next cycle.
I'm on the way back.
Okay. Well, that'll be interesting, and you know, that'll be interesting to see who Democrats find to run. Because as far as I know, there's nobody in the pipeline to run against Scott. I believe there was a couple in 2012 who ran against Scott. But what did Democrats do? They came and surrounded, protect and cover. You know the word. They protected and covered Scott. They protected and covered every single Democrat because they were Democrats. So y'all got kind of a identity crisis going on here, because what you say doesn't match up with what you do on anything, and that's a problem for trying to save the party. How the hell are you going to save the party? Y'all don't know what y'all doing. Y'all don't know who the hell y'all are. So when you say save the party, what are you saving?
Well, there's a lot of us, particularly at local levels. We're talking about county commission districts, precinct level, who believe in
to save the party. So what are you saving?
Again, a lot of us are not pushing. We get into these positions where we say, okay, these people have been in charge X amount of years. They know what they're doing. That shit is ending. A lot of that is fixing to end because people are like, look, we don't support you. We don't believe you to take us down this road. And then we're down this road and we're feeling lost. That's why I say we had a fork in the road and folks are trying to decide which fork are we going to take. I mean, so there has to be some serious soul searching. This is why I couldn't come on the air last week, because I'm searching. We're gonna be downstairs. But we're gonna be
okay.
Yeah, it's just crazy. So is the noise not coming over there or not? Did she say she was coming on? But that's the big thing that we did. That's the thing that we did.
But we have Lisa Ring coming on at 12:45. Lisa was in Philadelphia for the Democratic National Convention. She is also working off with the Bryan County Dems. She's down in the first congressional district.
Since we're going to be talking to a Bernie delegate, and I'm sitting here next to Bridgman, who was a Hillary delegate,
okay,
that is working hard trying to get us to come together. Bridgman, you kind of want to give us your snapshot of what happened during the convention, all the little controversies from your standpoint, that we was hearing in the news, and what actually went down?
I want to say that first and foremost, that the media made it look worse than it actually was on actually being there. I mean, there was a lot of contention, there was a lot of division, and there was a lot of angry people there, but things that were projected, such as Black Lives Matter protesting Cory Booker, there was literally five people who happened to be next to the CNN microphone, and CNN took the opportunity to make it look like it was organized protest of Black Lives Matter chanting Black Lives Matter when Cory Booker was speaking. And that's not the case, because I didn't even know there was any such protest actually being there until after the fact. Somebody called me and was like, why is Black Lives Matter protesting Cory Booker? And I'm like, what are you talking about? So that's just one instance, and there were several instances of the media rushing to Sanders delegates when they would have a display of protest and try to make it seem thing that it actually was. And that's not to say that there was some real hardcore division, but it wasn't as bad as they made it seem. I know that there were some coordinated efforts to block Bernie Sanders delegates from being seen with signage. I mean, that did happen. I witnessed that personally. But and there was a coordinated effort to, like, drown out any chance when they were trying to disrupt Hillary's speech. But that is to be expected when you have more people in a particular arena supporting one particular candidate over the other. And my biggest problem with the convention that nobody seems to talk about is the logistical nightmare that it became, and that all fire marshal regulations and rules seem to have been suspended, because had there been a fire, if I even go as far as say a mass shooting or a terrorist attack, but something as simple as a fire, several people would have lost their lives, because it took me an hour to get from where I was sitting in the Georgia delegation to get outside of the building, just to get out of the stadium arena. It took me, I'm not going to say an hour, let's say anywhere between 45 minutes and an hour. And once I got outside, it took me another 30 minutes to get to where the Uber Lounge was. And I understand that, you know, you had dignitaries there and Secret Service was there. But when you have a lot of elderly people in a hot, confined area, you know, they had people sitting in the aisles of the stadium. And, you know, I will say something that somebody tried to say, bringing my attention, tried to say that there were paid seat fillers. There's no way that's possible, because I know of several people, several Sanders supporters, who were like, I don't want to see Hillary, whatever, and actually sold their credentials. Like, I know one guy sold his for $500. So if they were paying people to fill seats, I think that's kind of like oxymoron.
Let me just say, I did not watch the convention. I watched the convention on C-SPAN. I did not watch it on any major news media, which is a better way to watch it. And I can tell you one thing. I don't know if they were seat fillers or not, but you could tell from the acoustics in the room, you knew when those Bernie people walked out and the tone changed. They walked out right before Elizabeth Banks came on, because that was a tough room for her to work. And if you were watching on C-SPAN, you didn't need to watch that, because C-SPAN was the best way to watch it if you couldn't be there, because we got to see some of the things that you, Bridgman, said that we didn't get to see on major media, because they were cutting for commercials and they were cutting in the best part. But we saw a lot of it. And there was a lot of things that can't be denied. It was not a pretty scene. Once, you know, after day two, after day two and after Bernie, you know, was meant, after the whole falling on the sword ceremony was done, then y'all went into Unity, the musical part. But, yeah, we saw it, but we didn't see, we, you know. Now, that's disconcerting to hear about, you know, the people sitting in the aisles and everything. And that's,
yeah, it got me more upset about the credential selling thing, because the credentials is what allows security to be able to know who's supposed to be there, who's not.
Yeah, you're right.
So you got people selling their credentials.
So people scout tickets at concerts, and that's akin to the same thing, right?
Yeah, people, a lot of the Bernie Sanders people are not going to want to see Hillary speak. They don't want to be a part of it.
Right.
Protest, they
so they scalp their ticket.
Yeah.
So they scalp their ticket. Is that not capitalism at its best?
$1,000 to get there, I think that's pretty, I mean, enticing. And that's just low bottom number, $500. That's below the, at least $500. There are people who are selling them like $1,000. I know one guy.
So the whole, the credentials were a problem. Let me ask you, the WikiLeaks, that wasn't a problem.
It was a major issue. They had to fire the chairs. It was a first day that was like the big. I actually met Donna Brazile that day when she was named interim chair, and it was really crazy. It was really hectic, and nobody really knew what was going to happen. But I think that given everything that happened, I mean, I personally feel Debbie should have been gone 2 years ago. And it should have been a non-issue, but given that she was endorsed by the president and all of that, I mean, the situation is what it is, but I think she needs to leave from politics completely. And most Democrats, regardless of who they came to support, most Democrats I talked to, they had a negative opinion of her prior to the leaks anyway.
Yeah, most of us didn't like her. We didn't want her being our leader to begin with.
Y'all. Yeah, but y'all was just, but nobody was doing everything. I mean, it was not a secret that Democrats were not happy with DSW, but yet she was allowed to remain, not for months, but for years. You know, and for someone to stay in that position when you presided over massive losses in 10, 12, and 14, right? You lost the control of the chamber, and you know the scuttlebutt, the whole gossip behind the whole in Democratic circles. Everybody wanted DWS to go, but nobody wanted to pull light the candle on her. So she was there until this happened, which really couldn't be swept under or denied anymore. And the only reason they asked her to leave us because it threatened to blow up the convention. That's it. Otherwise, Debbie would still be there. And they came out, and they are fighting. Democrats are fighting to keep Debbie. So they don't want her head of the DNC, but she's okay to represent constituents down in Florida.
And see, that's the thing. Now, Bridgman just left, so, but that's the thing that a lot of folks a bitching about now. It's like, okay, the folks in Florida, and that has been a concerted effort now. I haven't seen the last group of polls that what it looked like between Schultz and Cordova, but I am sure that it has boosted Cordova a little bit from where it was, because your people even looking at you now that you went all of this route to do what? You know what I'm saying? Because the thing is, now none of the plan, there's no indication that any of the plans that they laid forth actually ever got approved that we saw. But we do know that, and me and you particularly know, Stacey, just from watching over the last couple of years how stuff really rolls, that the party does have some power when it comes to influencing the voters, because everybody like, okay, if all the big wigs on the side, is one candidate versus another, then that must be the best candidate. And it has an ability to suppress the vote. You know, I don't necessarily go into all the election rigging, because I've been a member of a board of elections and I know how hard that possibly would be. But voter suppression, is the easiest way to fool with an election. You don't even have to mess with the machines. Just keep people from wanting to go vote. Make them feel like their vote does not matter. Make them feel like they are not a part of the mainstream, or at least get them to, if you can't get them to go vote for the person you want them to vote, you keep them from voting at all. And that was the biggest problem. And I think that was happening way before folks even got in the line at the different polling places.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think people are using the wrong term. You know, they're trying to articulate what's going on. Vote rigging is very difficult to do in certain conditions. I kind of agree. I don't think the vote was rigged so much, but it was heavily influenced, and there's a lot of parts that are in play. You know, we often look for just one. We look for one villain. There are multiple villains in this story, okay? And there's a lot of people who play a particular role. Those private organizations known as political parties are one. And it does take a certain amount of collusion. But voter suppression, I mean, we saw it here in Georgia. And some of the things that are done, like you saw nobody, absolutely nobody doing voter registration in Georgia before the March 1st primary. Now everybody's coming out under a rock. We got to register these voters. We got to get this done. So, you know, that's kind of a simple way to, you know, suppress your primaries and then try to get as many people out in the general. That's kind of suppression 101. But a lot of people haven't, if it doesn't affect people directly, they don't see it or they don't care. It was easy for Americans to see what happened in Ohio and in Florida and be mad about it, but, you know, it doesn't affect them. They don't care. Now that particularly the Bernie people saw what was going on through the Democratic primary process, they kind of, you know, have gotten an idea how it's done and how sausage is really made, and they don't like the taste. So, that's how it goes. This is the world as we currently know it. Is it the world it should be? Is this how democracy should work? Hell no. But we're just speaking on what it is right now. What it can be and who has the political will to change it are two totally different stories, because that would require having some testicular fortitude.
And see, that comes back to me while I'm talking to a lot of the younger folks, particularly the ones who are most upset. Now, some of them are getting it, that it wasn't necessarily, you know, we talk about this rigging situation. It wasn't necessarily that I believed that anything was rigged. We know that was voter suppression. And the other thing is that there is that we had people playing in a game who were new to the game, that necessarily did not know the rules. They thought they knew the rules. And we got to look at it. There's a lot of Americans who consider themselves to be informed, who really do not have an understanding of how our system works, because we don't even necessarily teach it in school. The way we teach how the American system of government operates in school doesn't take into play party politics. It takes in the fact, okay, the Constitution says this, and we have the legislative branch, and we have the executive branch, and we have the judicial, and we are a nation that's supported by the Constitution. And then we don't fail to teach them that, but there's political parties that are not mandated inside of the Constitution. There are also state constitutions, and there are state assemblies, and some of those states operate on rules slightly different than we deal with on the federal level, because all the United States Constitution says is that a state government must guarantee that we have a Republican form of government. Doesn't say that it has to match, because, like, for instance, in the state of Nebraska, they don't have two houses in their state legislature. It's a unicameral house.
I would go to Nebraska and not understand. So there's no House of Representatives and there's no Senate here. No, they're just the Nebraska, whatever they call it, the Nebraska legislature. They're one house. We have states here who are commonwealths, and there's some differences in why they call themselves commonwealth versus states. I mean, we have territories, and that's another thing that people don't even realize, is that we watch the convention and we watch people in Puerto Rico and Guam and American Samoa and the North Marianas. We watch the Northern Marianas sit there and send delegates, but what we fail to realize is them folks can't even vote for the President of the United States. They can't. They will not cast their vote in November. This was their only voice of who they may get to represent the country as a whole. They got the voting primaries, and they got to send a delegate to the nomination process. But they can't vote for President of the United States, just like the people in D.C.
But it doesn't really matter. But really, I mean, Scott, really, considering how our presidential elections are conducted, and it comes down to 10 or 12 states who basically elect the President of the United States, does it even matter at this point? And considering on top that we are being asked to choose from the two politicians that this is not about who you like the most. Who do you dislike the least? So this all boils down to my favorite analogy, two bald men arguing over a comb. So why, I mean, and you're right. There are some electoral and voting system problems that need to be fixed. But at the end of the day, we're sitting up here. Even if those are fixed, you still have a fundamental problem with the majority of the American public saying nah to both of these candidates.
Right. But we have, and then people have no say whatsoever on how these folks got chosen. But again,
right, even but that can go back to the parties. You know, we can go back to the parties and the control issue that the Democrats have. So you never really have choice. You have lack of options.
But at the same time, we can't necessarily blame all of this on the system, because this is something that I've come to the conclusion over the last 2 weeks, just watching and listening to folks. Well, whether what side, regardless of what side, even if you were Republicans and didn't like what the hell happened, we look at the voter turnout, okay? Even if there were suppression efforts, there are still, even when they're not suppression efforts, even when we were sitting there looking at what we thought were pretty, well, we go back and look, they may not have been as fair as we thought they were. But the American people do not vote like other, quote-unquote, democracies on the face of the planet Earth.
Why is that? We have the longest electoral process on the planet, right? It is ridiculous how our elections are done. And when you have people who feel...
And we're supposedly one of the most stable democracies, it is, and maybe that has something to do with the way our system is set up. But,
well, we're not a democracy. Let's stop saying that. We're not a democracy.
Supposedly. I use the word supposedly. Now, the thing is, though, we as Americans no longer take our duty as citizens as seriously as we used to. We have the ability right now in 2016 for more people to vote than at any point in time in American history. And we're fighting about keeping the people who can vote with the right to continue to vote. You in this country right now, regardless of color, you can register to vote. Now, they might make it difficult for certain groups of people, but you can. You women can vote. If you're 18, you can vote. If you're old, you can vote. There's so many. Everybody has the ability to have that voice. And even today, as I was out, just before we did the video shoot, we did a little bit of, you know, voter engagement activity in the area we were in. And I still had people, when I walked up, to tell me, I don't vote. And I
And what did they say?
You might get, let's say, I came across 12 people that said they don't vote. Three gentlemen said, I'm a felon, and I'm still on paper, so I can't vote. Okay, so boom.
Okay.
All right, I got you. I understand you.
And there's a lot of folks because of three strikes and other things courtesy of the Clinton camp, you know, not necessarily
right.
Mrs. Clinton, but the Clinton policies. They actually, actually locked up most of the voters they need, but go on.
Yeah, so then I had, and I'm looking through my notes right now because I tried to write this stuff down so I had an understanding. So then I had, okay, that was three. This, the next four that I got categorized was I'm just not registered. I hadn't taken time. So I asked them, did they have a smartphone? All four of them had smartphones. I asked them to go to their Google Play and pull up the My Voter app. They pulled it up, opened it up. They registered to vote right now.
You don't even have to download the app. You can just go straight to the website and
okay,
register to vote. Okay, but now
right.
that they registered to vote, then what? Okay,
you
because
know,
here's my argument.
I wrote down their names so I can go back. I wrote down their names, got some basic information so I can go back and see if I can track them down later. But, okay, then, so there's seven people right there. One, three couldn't vote because they were felons. Four wouldn't register to vote. Then I came across another three. They
mm-hmm.
were registered to vote. They just didn't even know that what was going on. I'm like, whoa, hold on. Did you vote in the presidential primary? No, I didn't know that was going on till like the day of. Okay, but you registered to vote, so you just couldn't win. But I didn't make that plan. All right, okay, cool, all right. Then it was like, okay, so you know there was another group of primaries after that. No, I didn't. Do you know we just had some runoff? I've seen people out here holding up signs. Okay, November is coming. There's still time for you to go vote. What is your name? Good. Bridgman was out there taking up information anyway because he's working for the Democratic Party. He was getting folks information so he can get back to them about voting. So he dealt with that. So now that's 4, 7, 8, 9, 10. The last two, they just didn't give a fuck. I don't vote. This shit don't matter to me. Blah, blah, blah.
And what? But why do they say that? But here's the reason why they say that.
They gave me an answer that I could accept. And it was like, none of this shit matters. They was like, none of this shit matters. I can go vote. They going to do what the fuck they want to do anyway. Blah, blah, blah.
Is there anything untruthful about that statement? Because if you ask them who's their representative, they may not know. They may not know because that representative is not going to bother with their area because they don't vote. So it's a self-defeating prophecy. But
exactly.
You have elected officials and candidates who play the numbers game. They only go to the district or the part of the district where they have people that vote, right? So those people
exactly.
who have fallen out, when they see policies that don't affect them, when you are worried about how you're going to pay your bills, how you're going to get to work, how you're going to eat, they're damn right. None of this matters.
It matters.
It
right.
really
but,
doesn't in a lot of way. I can see both sides of it.
And I understand that, and that's why underserved communities are usually some of our poorest communities because those people are worried about survival.
And you have representation who cannot relate to them or who have, they have tuned out. They don't care about those people anymore. They don't donate. They don't vote. So they don't exist.
Right. So you try to get so my point has always been that from a local level, if you really wanted to try to change some stuff, it's figure a way to get those people engaged and it matters to them.
Run them for office. Don't tell them to vote. Tell them to run.
Yeah, that's a very hard thing to engage because, one, they are worried about their present short-term needs. Matter of fact, that was the whole point of what we was out there today talking about was that in the platform for George Chidi was why do we have gang violence? Why do we have these situations? And you know, this was the whole reason of breaking it down. Why?
why, and then now we know why, this is what we can do about it. And for this to happen, I need us to go, we need a certain elected official. But the people just need to understand why, even if you're outside the district. It isn't always that these people are, they're not motivated. They're worried about trying to survive. And in this particular situation, what we was out on Central Avenue, Central Drive, talking about was, okay, if you are in a state of what we consider homelessness, man, homelessness is not always living on the street. It's being not having a stable home environment. You're moving around every 2 or 3 months. You know, you, as Jerry says, you're chasing the 1 month free move-in specials.
Why is that? Because predatory lending wreaked havoc in Georgia because of the loose laws that the Georgia General Assembly failed to enact. And one of the reasons why is that over half the damn Georgia legislator, their side hustle is real estate. So they don't want to be regulated by anything that was going to affect their side money. So we ended up with the foreclosure crisis decimating Metro Atlanta and rural Georgia. We've got it eroded our tax bases. Then we had on top of that austerity cut that we were told we needed because it was our fault for the economic crisis. And we had elected officials who sat back and still continue to do nothing about it. And there hasn't been a recovery for anybody, you know, who was under a certain percentile in this country.
We got Lisa. I think we got Lisa here, man. And
yay, Lisa, yay!
Hey, Lisa!
Hey!
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Well, everyone, Lisa Ring was one of our delegates from Georgia, from the 1st Congressional District, who was in Philadelphia. You may have seen her in some videos that have been floating around. And we gave everybody who went there some time to decompress, but we wanted to have you on to talk about what went on in Philly because we saw it from our bird's eye view, but you were there. I first have to say to you and all the Bernie delegates, because I saw you in Savannah before you left. I was down there for a brand new Congress meeting, and I have to say I am so proud of all of you who went there against the odds. You didn't care. You were sure of purpose. And you went anyway, even though it was heartbreaking at some parts for the Bernie delegates, and it was very difficult to watch this go down in real time. But I just wanted to just show some love to you and the rest of them, because that is what being a revolutionary is about. That is what a true fighter is. You know the odds, you still go in, and you guys held a good fight. So on that note, I just wanted to...
Yes, we're proud of y'all.
Yes.
Well, thank
you.
We
love you.
Thank you, and we need to hear that. it was quite an experience, and it was, I say it was both the best and worst time of my life. It was surreal, almost, the way things were happening, because on the one hand, I was so proud to be there and to be representing the over 12,000 people in my district who voted for Bernie Sanders. And the voters who supported me as a delegate, and being in such a surrounded by so many like-minded people was really an energizing experience. And that part of it, I'm just so thankful that I got to do that. On the other hand, it really, I would have to say, although I've tried not to take any of this personally, this is all politics, which of course is personal, but I've tried not to make it about me. However, I'm very disappointed in my party, very disappointed in my state's party, and more than ever see the changes that need to be made. So this was an opportunity for Bernie Sanders energized so many people, and got people involved for the first time, or people who had given up brought them back in and gave them hope that things were going to change this time. And what the party said was, no, we don't want you. We don't want all you young people who are enthusiastic. You don't know anything. You don't have any experience. We don't want you independents, you free thinkers who don't toe the line on every issue. We don't want you organizing. We're the establishment. We want to keep things the way they are, and we'll be hostile to you if you don't fall in line. And that's the way the convention was, the entire convention.
So coming back and after having that experience and, you know, with the bitter and the sweet that came with it, has it renewed your passion for reform, or what direction do you feel led to take after the post-convention?
Yes, for me personally, although I can't speak for, when you're talking about the Bernie delegation, particularly in Georgia, everybody was different. Everybody reacted a different way. After the nomination, there were two people who walked out and like threw their credentials and said, you know, I'm done. I'm done with this party. They never came back. We had some people who left to join the protesters because they really just wanted to get out of the Wells Fargo Center and to a place where there was a much better attitude, I guess, about democracy. They just needed a break from the Hillary fest that was going on. And they came back. And this is what's happening to the party, is that there are some people who are gone for good. There are some people who, they were there saying, well, you know, convince me. Convince me that this is the way I need to go and that this party is representing me, and they were shut out. And now they're struggling with, well, what do I do? What are my choices here? There aren't very many choices. I myself and a couple others that were with me are committed stronger than ever to changing things from the inside. But the way that we're going to do that is with people from the outside as well. We can't do this anymore. You're an independent. You're not part of the party. No, you're in my district, and you believe in the issues that I believe in, so we're going to work together on those issues, and we're going to get the most progressive candidates elected to office on every level, and that's what I'm committed to doing. I'm committed to keeping us together, unified as progressives, changing it from the inside and the outside at the same time.
And, you know, that reminds me, one of my favorite quotes by Thomas Edison, I have not failed, I just found 10,000 ways that won't work.
Right.
So, you know, you are really embracing that quote and what you're doing. And, you know, it's difficult for me because I've dealt with the party and I got issues with them, okay? Some of them are personal. And, you know, I have seen what a lot of the Bernie delegates I have seen in the past. So it's going to be a little bit more difficult to get a person like me to help you in your endeavors. And there may be ways where people like I can help. But what I love is that you are not giving up the fight. You are passionate in trying to save something that you think can be saved. And you are actually doing the work to get that done. So in terms of going forward, and you're with the Bryan County Dems down in Georgia, right?
Yes. Yes,
so
I am.
What would you need in terms of help in trying to recharge the party? What would you need for people in your area to do to help you achieve that goal?
To reach out to the party? Okay, my approach is a little bit different. I'm organizing within the Democrats because they are the closest to what I believe. I've been a Democrat my whole life, but I'm also, as far as thinking, an independent thinker, and I believe in doing what works. I don't believe in blind loyalty. What I need for people to do is to do the work, to get involved, in whatever level it is, whether it's taking office within a county committee, whether it's taking some type of position as a state committee member in the state party, whether it's locally getting involved, like in Savannah, we have a lot of people who are working on local issues with local elected officials. It doesn't have to be party lines. And a lot of the people that I'm friends with in this district are actually Green Party. I'm also interested in brand new Congress. I think that's so important. This isn't about party lines to me. Of course, the organizing aspect of it is something that has to be done within the Democratic Party to an extent, you know, following the bylaws and the charter of the county committee. But I want to work with more people than that. I want to represent my county and my district, my state, and progressive thinkers throughout the country to achieve what we need to achieve. You know, that label doesn't matter to me at all. If you believe in single-payer health care, that's what's important to me. If you want to ban fracking, that's what's important to me. And if you're going to, you know, put your money where your mouth is, so to speak, run for office, register people to vote, talk about the issues, protest, whatever way you can be involved is all I have ever asked of anybody that says they want to change things. Because if we sit back and we complain about everything that's going on and we're not actually doing the work, we're letting these people that we're complaining about make all the decisions. And Scout, I have to say something about something you said earlier where I disagree with you. You said that there were a lot of naive people in it for the first time who didn't know the rules, who didn't understand politics. There were a lot of us there that do understand politics and that do understand the rules. And one of the problems was that the people who didn't know the rules tried to learn them but got no information anywhere, because the way the rules are written are, we're going to change them as we go along to suit whatever it is we need to do. So there is it's impossible to know what the rules are or how to play the game, because there are a lot of us in there trying to do that, involved in this fight for many years, who got nowhere and got no information. Or when they got information, that information was changed. So it was...
And I can agree with you on that. I can agree with you there. What I'm saying is that there are a lot of folks that I've heard that I've talked to personally, and they say, well, this is supposed to work like this. I'm like, no, that's not how that was supposed to work. And I then explained them to, well, nobody told us that. And I was like, well, you know, it's like in politics, unless you are being groomed to take over, nobody's going to give you anything. You're going to have to take it. I came out of left field and came in, and I wanted to know. So I went and found out. I went and looked for bylaws. I went and asked questions. But a lot of folks just sit there and they let, okay, this is what's going on. And I understand that a lot of people, particularly the ones who ran for delegate, you guys understood what the rules were because you took the chance to come engaged. I'm talking about people on the street who I still hear and are yelling and fussing and crying and hollering.
There is a lot of that. But there were those of us, we had one delegate who is an attorney go over the DNC charter and the convention rules to tell us exactly how to proceed with everything. She went over these documents, she briefed us on them and told us, you know, pretty much what it says is that the chair of the convention makes it up as they, you know, as they need to. It's very circular. So you can't say, well, rule, you know, 11A says this, and this is what we need to follow, because Rule 11A says it's up to the discretion of the party. So
right.
It's difficult.
But what we fail to realize that even then, when we're in convention, that if it's not something that you still have to fall back, because it is a function of the party, the bylaws and the charter of the party itself should be the basis of that. And so that's where we get into a lot of the water muddy here, because a lot of people don't even understand it. We get mad because, and you wonder why I get mad about coronations, because here in the state of Georgia, back in 2013, we actually put forth a bylaw amendment that would have allowed us to endorse a Democratic candidate, the one that we thought the party was the best, because we had a lot of problems coming out of rural Georgia where we had Republicans that were running as Democrats, and we needed to be able to ship them out. And it was the same leaders who coordinated Michelle Nunn, Jim Barksdale, which I like Jim Barksdale. I have no problem with him. Hillary Clinton, the whole nine yards, the people who did the exact same thing were the people who voted against this. And then you came back not even 6 months later after this vote, and you went to try to coordinate somebody when we gave you a mechanism.
Right.
A well written mechanism to do it, and then you voted against it, and then you do it. You never brought it up again for a vote. Because if you knew, we knew this day was going to come. And I was actually a supporter of the endorsing process. But
mm-hmm.
now, if y'all voted it down, then this is the law of the land. That's what we're going to go by, and that's what pisses me off. Because I supported
yeah.
being able to do this, but then you said no. So, okay, we said no, so why are we still doing it?
Right.
You voted
right.
down
it,
a way to do it legally, and then you turn around and do it illegally. Well, against the rules, because there's actually no legality in that, but you decide to break your own rules.
Right. And what is the recourse for that? And I did find that at times the inexperience was frustrating as a Bernie delegate, because we would have people saying, hey, you know what, we need to lobby the superdelegates, because they really would have made a difference if it had been an actual vote, which I'm not real sure what happened there. But we need to lobby the superdelegates without looking into the fact that a good number of those superdelegates are fundraisers for Hillary and had actually, you know, gotten money into the state party of Georgia, $1 million or whatever it is that they said we were given by Hillary. And there is no way that they were going to be lobbied into voting for Bernie Sanders and against their moneyed interests. So there was a deeper political story there that a number of people who were more idealistic weren't aware of, and that
right.
was frustrating as well.
And that's,
some
of the rules also. I'm talking about some of the unwritten rules, some of the things that you know
uh-huh.
that you've learned as tactics and strategies that are used within side of the political arena. And me and Stacey talk about this a lot, the difference between how operatives operate and activists operate. Because
yes.
if you are a person who works on campaign staffs, your party, our apparatchnik, if you're somebody like that, there are certain strategies and tactics and tools that you will use to get a candidate into office. That activists, they don't go into that realm. They don't go into that realm at all. And it looks dirty from their point of view, but it's how we play a game. I say it all the time. Politics is warfare without bloodshed.
I agree with you, but I happen to be one of those activist people that can't stand the game of politics. Because you're playing with people's lives. You're this is really a matter of life and death for people. And if it comes down to money and who has the strongest covert operation, people are dying because of it. I'd so much rather be on the transparent end of it, holding up the signs, looking like the crazy person and saying, no, this is not the way we need to do things. We need to represent the people. If it takes me looking crazy to do that, then, you know, that'll be the case.
And we need that. That is a definite, and me and Stacey agree on this, that we need both sides. And, you know, and everybody's not necessarily built to play in one arena versus the other. I mean, because activists do a really good job of bringing awareness to a situation, bringing PR to the, bringing public relations, all of that stuff, letting people say, hey, there's a problem, here it is. Okay, and at some point, operatives, people who are inside, and people who are inside the gaming mechanism, at that point say, okay, how do we turn protest into policy? And
right.
that's
well,
a big point.
You know, as one who's an activist, I mean, I can say that activists, they do need some guidance they do need inside game guidance in order to be more effective. What they do, and you guys talked about a good example, like the Bernie delegates, they went up into the Democratic House, right, and you didn't know, you got to know the game, and you got to know the rules of the playground, right?
Right.
So they didn't know the rules of the playground, but I have a problem when we start talking about activists versus operatives, because operatives, they're you know, as an operative, your loyalty is to your contract. You don't give a damn about the party. You don't give a damn about the candidate. You give a damn about your money. Activists are in it to win it, and they know they are already coming up against the fight. Yep. So you can't really, it's kind of hard working together with operatives, because operatives are higher than, they about that life, they about that money, period.
Well, I wouldn't have to say that, because there are some of us who will not work for certain candidates or for certain causes because it's not inside of what we would consider our wheelhouse. Some of us, we making money, but we not making the money we could make because we are sitting there taking candidates who really can pay you what you can make on somebody else's race, you know.
Sometimes being though in the middle like that is worse than being one extreme or the other. I would almost rather know that somebody is working for the contract and working for the money and doesn't really, you know, give a shit about who wins or what happens in the future, than be that person in the middle who says, oh, yeah, I'm with you, I'm with you, I'm with you, and then stabs you in the back later on when they've gotten what they wanted.
Oh, honey, they'll stab you from the front. but why stab you in the back? But you're right. It is a little bit more difficult when it's in the middle, and that's the game that is being played as well. There's multiple games with multiple levels being played, right?
Yes.
And that's just one of them. The nonprofits also play a part in the game as well. They're no better. They're basically operatives in a nonprofit status.
Yeah,
so,
they're not the They're doing
well.
Themselves.
They're about that grant. They got to keep that grant money going because they're nonprofits and depending on, you know, funding. And so when you are not when the consumer names the tune, I mean, when the producer names the tune, the consumer's got to dance. So that also muddies the waters as well in the body politic. So it's kind of hard when talking about activists. Activists are the heart and soul. They are the conscience of the people and supposedly of the parties. The parties are about power, money, and just about everybody else involved is. So you have two diametrically opposed goals that it's never going to work because you're not on common ground. So somebody's
right.
Got to get in line.
And, you know, that's really what we saw at the convention. We saw that battle going on. We had Bernie delegates, I don't know exactly who they were, but that were put there by the party to do what they did. They were there to cause division in the beginning before we even got to the convention, to cast doubt on other delegates, to disappear when it came time to act as a group. These were covert operations. And the things that were said happened at the convention really did happen. I don't know if the seat fillers were paid, but 1 minute half the convention was empty, you know, and then slowly people started filling into the seats until every seat was filled for the most important speakers, like Michelle Obama, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton. The whole stadium was filled, every seat, with people waving signs and, you know, screaming Hillary, especially over any chanting that was happening. But this was an organized effort to do this. Before those people came in, everything was lukewarm. Nobody was excited about anything except when Bernie was talking. When those people were there in their nice little suits and dresses, it got loud in there. There was a lot more excitement generated.
And you can tell, I mean, I knew the exact moment, you know, I was saying earlier on the show, the moment the walkout went, and big ups to, you know, from an activist That moment gave me life because that was a very powerful, effective moment. Because if you were watching on, if you were watching on any of the networks, you really couldn't get the power of that movement. If you were watching it on C-SPAN, you could feel, you could hear in the acoustics of the room, that room got dead really fast, and they tried to cover it up on the other networks, but that was a very powerful moment for those who organized it, and I ain't saying their name, but big ups. That was a beautiful moment, and I was sitting back here pounding on the table like, yes, this is how you do it. So, you know, and that's a direct action that people.
Because we got a caller here that's holding. Let us take a moment to see if the caller is just listening or they got us something to say. Hey, caller, how you doing? You've been holding a while. You got anything to say? You're just listening.
No, I'm just listening. Y'all go ahead and handle it.
Okay, appreciate you. Just want to make sure you had a chance to speak.
No,
well,
I
mean,
what
we got you on the line. Do you like what you're hearing so far?
Yeah, we good. Yeah, definitely. Good job. And, you know, it is what it is, man. This is what this system is. You got to figure out ways to fight it. Y'all are out here fighting, getting frustrated, trying to figure it out. This is what we do every generation.
I think it's funny. I think it's funny. I'm like Nero with my fiddle. You have to be able to embrace the insanity and the hilarity of it all at some point. It is sad, but some of it is hella funny. You can't make this stuff up. You cannot make this stuff up. But I'm glad you're enjoying it. And do you have any suggestions on or how we should move forward? I mean, we like to hear from people like you, too.
No, I'm not qualified to give suggestions on going forward.
Yes, you are. Everyone is qualified.
Do you vote and do you care? If you vote and you care, you qualify.
If you breathing and you live in this country, you are inherently qualified, probably more than the people who actually think they are qualified. So don't ever think you're not qualified.
Yeah, well, let's put it like this. Y'all goals are probably different from my goals, just in the sense that you just talked about watching it burn. I have no problem with that. Until this country is willing to be just and truthful and honest about how they treat people in this country, especially Black, Latino, and the youth of this country, until they're honest about that and honest about bringing jobs back here to where people can make a living and still have their dignity, I'm really not interested in the two parties. I'll vote third party. I don't care if it's Stein or even stupid Johnson. I don't care, but I'm tired of it. So I'm not in the space that you guys are in to where I'm like I'm not even civil at this point on it. So you know what I mean? I'm enjoying listening to y'all, though.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I thank you for that, and I think we just got our caller comment of the day.
That was awesome.
This is from South Georgia somewhere also. Let's see who this is. Hey, Carla, what's going on?
Hi, this is Fanny Marie calling from
Brooklyn. Hey, Miss Fanny!
Hey. Hey. I just wanted to make one comment. People like myself, we've been Democrats all our lives. We've had others telling us who to vote for, not interested in party politics. And suddenly when you're drawn into the intricacies of party politics, you find out it's a different world. And believe me, it is a different world for me. It's not something that I enjoy, but I'm learning that what I thought was a Democrat is not a Democrat. And who I want to vote for is not necessarily who the party will vote for.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Therefore,
but see,
I'm listening. I'm trying to turn off one computer and listening to the conversation. And that really bugged me about what happened this time around, because our voices were shut out. And the democracy that I'm working for is for every voice to be heard. Might not be a voice that I like, but it should be heard. I don't like suppression from Republicans, Democrats, Dixiecrats, Libertarians, Green Partiers. I despise suppression.
Yeah.
And the only way for anyone to move forward is to be able to absorb other people's points of view.
Let me ask you a question, Miss Fanning. Since I know why you hate suppression, because you down there in Brooks County and, you know, and all the things that happened down there. How do you act if you read that story that came out of Hancock County about how the deputies are going around knocking on doors, asking people to get a identification and verifying their voter registration?
That is absolutely horrible. It should be running on CNN, MSNBC, C-SPAN. It should have been running 24/7. It's the type of tactics that have been used for years. Technology is bringing it up close and personal in our living rooms. It's no different from what we've endured 50 years plus. As we celebrate August 6th, my birthday, we were celebrating the Voting Rights Act. But when you really, really think about it, and don't start me with this Democratic Party versus Republican Party, because what I've learned is that the old Democratic Party that my father and my grandfather and those supported was basically a Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
Of the Dixiecrats. And
right.
they endorsed the candidates and then told us who to vote for. And I'm thinking this is a new era. My brother is sick. He's not able to do what he did. So I had to come out and take a, you know, I didn't want to, but I had to. And I'm finding out there is no difference now. There is no difference. They will endorse me. They will work. They will love me as long as I toe the line and support who they want me to support. I'm Bernie Sanders. I was a part of Bernie Sanders' movement in the 60s and
70s. Oh,
tell
it, girl.
I'm comfortable with Bernie Sanders. I'm comfortable. That is my platform. But the BPG, especially, have done everything they could to suppress my voice. And there is no way I will accept that. And I'm working for my dad.
Now, see, this is what I'm talking about.
You got women like Fannie Mae and people like her all across the state who are still kicking it, working from their bed, working from wheelchairs like Dr. Constance Burke over in Dougherty County up there near Albany. She is sitting up there. She in a wheelchair sometimes. You got many people who are working, you know, who are busting their behind, you know, not making no money, not doing nothing, but they try to make every meeting, they try to make every phone call, they try to do this, that, and the other. And they are not respected. They are not given the voice they ought to be given. But these are the folks who are holding the line for us in some of the most hostile places in our state.
One other thing I need to say with that, I started out to say I don't know what makes me a Democrat. Because I can honestly say that I feel if it were up to the Democrats in the state of Georgia, Fannie Marie Jackson Gibbs would not be a Democrat. I can honestly see, I can say that. I can speak for myself. I'm not one of those lovable Democrats because I definitely have problems with leadership in the state of Georgia.
Does that
disqualify me from being a Democrat?
According to the Democratic
Party
of Georgia,
that's what I want to know. So that disqualifies me from being a Democrat. Where do I go to now for my voice to be heard?
Let's put it this way. If you or Lisa were to say, I represent the Democratic Party, I would be so down with that. Somebody's phone is ringing, too. But that's the problem. The people who are trying to bring me in aren't people like you and Lisa. It's the party establishment who threw us under the bus and are now panicking. because they have, you know, they're seeing this general election going through the tubes. So I don't know what we're supposed to do when people say we're trying to rebuild the party. Who am I supposed to follow, because nobody knows who they are?
What is that?
I don't know. It is very weird. It's the remix. I don't know.
I would like to say that is what I'm committed to, and what I'm fighting for is people like you, Fanny, and you, Stacy, and you, Scout, to all be the leaders. And to be this change that we need. That's what I'm fighting for, is to not let the party win and shut you out and make you feel discouraged. I know what they've done to you. I know that we all have our own stories, and some of us have more oppressive stories than others. But it's so important that we stick together, and that we are stronger that way, and that we fight together. It may not be for the party. It may be for a candidate. It may be on an issue. But as long as we are supporting one another, I think we can take back that power that they're trying to keep away from us. I think it's very important that we just, no matter how hard it is, we keep fighting and we don't give up. Because only then do they win. Only when we give up and say, I'm done with them, do they get what they want. And that's why I didn't walk out of the convention, because that's what they wanted. They wanted me to leave. They don't want me to stay there saying, you're not going to do this, not if I have any say in it. They don't want me there, but I'm going to stay there. So what I'm asking from all of you is to be supportive of me in that, so I can be supportive of you, and we can win this. It's important, and it's beyond the presidential race at this point, way beyond.
Right.
I am definitely, now that's something that I can get down with, because
that's how we take it forward. And, you know, we was trying to talk about this earlier in the show, and I think it cut off when I had my technical difficulties. I was talking about that is because regardless of what happens on the presidential level, we still have races taking place in our backyard. And the same people who are active, we all basically on the same side. We still want the same policies enacted. For whatever reasons, we may be supporting people differently at the national level, but we all kind of looking at the same candidates and the same issues locally. So we need to get together, just like Lisa is saying, we need to get together and work those problems out locally. Let's cut out all the craziness and help the folks in Hancock County cut out their craziness. Let's help the folks in DeKalb County get some honest and transparent government. Let's stop the voter suppression in Brooks County. Let's help build up the party in the Coastal Empire. Let's help bring back, you know, West Georgia and bring it into a place where at least they have a competitive races. You know, let's help out. Let's help out North.